I'm going to show a few examples here in this talk which are written in a language different from XPark. In fact, the language is called XPL, so I just wanted to briefly explain the differences and the similarities between the two languages. I'm going to skip over this, but basically we started working on XPL a few years ago, and that was one of the pipeline languages mentioned by Norm earlier. We produced a spec for it in 2005 as well, which we submitted to W3C. There are a few features shared between XPark and XPL, and I think if, when you see the examples, you'll recognize some constructs as well. It's very, very similar. They both share the same goals, performing sequences of operations in XML documents, or operations and sequences of XML documents as well. It has an XML-based syntax. It allows you to exchange XML documents between steps, and you can have steps with multiple inputs and outputs. You have iterations and conditionals for the pretty basic features. And there are some new things in XPROC that are not present in XPL, and that is exception handling, the viewport, the sequence of the documents between steps. XPL only supports one document going between two steps, parameters and options, and as well as a standard step library. But XPL has a step library, but it, of course, no standard. So XPROC can be seen as a superset of XPL with most XPL pipelines that can be transformed into XPROC through XSLT, for example. And as the other way, conversely, you can implement a subset of XPROC on top of XPL using XSLT. I'm going to mention as well a few words about OrientForms, which is an open source platform which evolved from a general purpose XML transformation platform for form solution, because that's where most of my use cases and my applications are actually coming from. In OrientForms, XPL, which means the pipeline language supported by Pavlin engine, implements very important parts of the platform, including supporting the MVC architecture, including post-processing of XML documents. I'm going to talk about all this in subsequent slides. It's also used to implement an AJAX server that hooks up to the XForms engine, and it's also used by developers to implement all sorts of little lightweight REST services that you can call from XForms. So I think that's about the main things that XPL is used for on the OrientForms at this point. A first application that I can look at, and in fact I should say first that the applications I'm contemplating right now are without any exception, I think, web-oriented. So you can imagine many applications like what Norm showed earlier, for example, producing a spec based on the docbook or format, for example. So command line type of applications. Here I'm really concentrating on web type of applications. You've probably all heard about MVC architectures, which is basically an architecture that separates producing the data and something that's called a model, and presenting the data and something called a view. And you can actually use XML pipelines to implement a controller in such an architecture. And here on this slide, I've shown how this can work. You can have a controller, basically written with XPL or XPROC, which calls models written themselves in the pipeline language. Those models produce data, which is then consumed by a view. And the view can be written with any XML type consuming type of technology, like XSLT or XInclude, XHTML, and XForms, XPL as well. And so in this slide, I represented the first page on the first line and the second page on the second line. And we can orchestrate all of this with a pipeline language. So how would you implement such a controller? Well, you can have one step in the pipeline, which is a request step. I think that's what we would call the request step in XPL, but I think in XPROC, the request step does something different. This is a proposed request step. And that step can extract a portion of the URL path which is submitted to the application. And then you can use a sequence of choose steps which contain WHEN branches, one for each path to process, and each branch can call a model sub-pipeline from the view pipeline, and you can serialize the final result to the client web browser. Here's an example of what a request step can do in the pipeline. It can produce, this is a document fragment, it can produce information coming from a DHCP request, including the protocol, the address, the server name, and so on. And so there's no reason why in a pipeline you cannot access information that comes from the outside world. Not everything has to be XML. And this is an example of a step that just extracts data from the air, basically, from an HTTP request, which is not XML, meaning the meta information is not XML, but you can very well build a step which formats that data as XML. This is just a subset of the information. I don't know if it's readable. What I wanted to mention here is that if you want to implement a controller with pipelines, it becomes very tedious to actually write the whole pipeline by hand. So what you could do is define a controller language which defines what page is built with. And here I've used the controller language that we use in OpenForms, which describes a page and with an ID, and then you have a path info which is going to be matched on the incoming request path. You specify a model pipeline here called viewAccountModel.xpl and a view pipeline called viewAccountView.xhtml. And you can very well take such a language and transform it through XSLT into a pipeline, which you then run through XPL or XPath. Oh, sorry, XPark. So that's one of the things you can do with pipelines. And so I'm going to show you actually an example of an actual description of a web application which uses this concept. Here, this is a description of a web application which defines a series of pages. So I have here a first page, then a second page described below, and so on. So each page is defined in sequence in the model and in the page flow description, as we call them here. And you specify which path they have to react to. So for example, if one reacts to a path called /pfc/-atm, and when this happens, the pipeline is going to execute this view. So I can actually show a demo of this if I just go to an example here, right? Yeah, it's not very exciting, but basically when I say here /pfc-atm, it displays this little page which contains, in fact, a form field. But what's interesting to know, actually what's important to know, is that in the background what's happening that we're actually running a big pipeline which executes components that matches on the path pfc-atm, and then run a sequence of XML pipelines and XSLT style sheets or XHTML, simply XHTML documents. So that's one of the little things I wanted to show. And then we can look at something I think which is a little more interesting as far as demos go. If you think about such a model where you have a web application and you want to produce different types of outputs, you may want to produce, in general you want to produce HTML, but you may have different sources. For example, you could have a docbook source, you could have an XSLFO source, or you can have what I call here a pseudo-HTML source, which is a pseudo-XHTML would work too, which is basically an XHTML document in no namespace at all. You can have an actual XHTML document, and you can have XHTML with export. You can have also some documents that you want to serve to your web browser. And for each of those documents, you may want to do some specific processing before sending it to the web browser. For example, an XHTML document may not be supported by a client. If you just send plain XHTML to Internet Explorer without actually using some fairly interesting backward compatibility rules, nothing good is going to happen. If you send XFONS to a client which doesn't support XFONS, nothing good is going to happen either. So you have all sorts of things you may want to send to a web browser, and to that I can add that things like Atom and RSS, and you may want to convert between one of the two depending on the client. you may want to send text and binary data encapsulated in XML and try to serialize that to text or binary to the client. You may have any other XML documents. And so if this was the problem you had to solve, which is having a collection of XML documents on disk and having to figure out a way of sending them to different web browsers, then I'm arguing here that XML pipelines actually are an excellent tool to solve this problem. And so this is what you can call a sort of epilogue pipeline in some kind of XML transformation system, because that would be the last pipeline to be run before you send data to the web browser. And what would such a pipeline do? Well, a pipeline would have to probably look at the content of your documents. For example, you can look at the root element of the document, and if the root element of the document is fo colon root, then you probably have an XSL fo document. In some other cases, like XForms, you may have to go look deeper into the document. For example, XForms may have an XForms model under the XHTML head, so you have to go look deeper before being able to identify an XML document as containing some XForms. So, this given, I can show you an example of an actual epilogue pipeline. Actually, what I would like to do, if possible, is I can't go full screen here. It's macOS 10. So this is an example of pipeline which does exactly this kind of processing. So we have a first step here called request, which extracts some data from the request. In fact, you can configure it, and you can obtain, for example, the request path. You can obtain some headers. Here I'm extracting the header called accept, which is sent by the web browser. I'm also extracting a little bit more data, and this data is going to be available in the pipeline. And you could do exactly the same with Xquark by having a component doing called HTTP request, for example. And then what I'm doing with this, and I'm using a choose construct, which looks a little bit like the Xproc choose construct and the XSLT choose construct, because they all come from the same initial inspiration. And then I'm going to have different cases depending on the contents of the document. So here I'm saying, well, if the root element is XHTML colon HTML, of course not literally, but what's meaningful here is the namespace bounds to that prefix, okay? Very clear. Then we're going to do a certain number of things. If I scroll down quite a bit into that pipeline, I'm going to find, well, this is just a plain pseudo HTML or pseudo XHTML document, which is in no namespace, and I'm going to do something different for that. If I have an fo root document, I'm going to do again a number of different things. If I have an admin thing, instead of feed, I'm going to do something else, and so on, and so on. In fact, that's pretty much where it ends in this case. But you can add your own document formats in such a pipeline to decide what to do. So if I look at some first example of what you can do here, if the document is actually XHTML, what we do here is that we apply a start sheet to it, which we call the theme, and that's just something you may want to do. In fact, we even have a nested choose here, which chooses one of three themes depending on certain conditions. So this is something you can also do in Xproc with the pchoose construct. And here, there's another, after you've applied the theme, you do the next step. And what the next step does here, actually, I'm going to remove this, is check if the browser sent an accept header, which contains application slash XHTML plus XML. I'm not sure there's more than one browser doing this. Firefox does it. Certainly IE doesn't do it. I don't think Safari does it. And Opera, I have some doubts. I don't think it does either. So basically, if your browser is Firefox, we're going to run this branch of the pipeline, which is going to do some processing to send XML, XHTML directly to the client, which is something fairly interesting. And in all the other cases, we're going to do another sequence of steps, which is going to transform the XHTML document so that it's actually plain HTML in the output. Right? So I'm going to just demo this really quickly. I'm just going to link to an example application here. It's one of the it's actually an XForms page. And if I look now at the source code for this page from the web browser, you notice that It is an XML document. I don't know if everything is right there, but it's anyway, I think Firefox now is really looking at this document as an XML document and using an XML parser in it. Although I can't swear it does that, but you should. But anyway, we send a document to the browser with all the namespace declarations, and all the rest of the page is plain XHTML, but you probably noticed that I'm not sure if we have an example here of we should have an example of an image tag. And that image tag is closed here, if you notice. You would not have to do with HTML, of course. So, and then of course the application is kind of working. Then what we did, I should mention this, to send in this sequence of steps that sends XHTML to the document, we ran an intermediate step here, which is called the QName converter, which actually moves every single element in the XHTML namespace. It keeps it in that namespace, but it removes prefixes. And the only reason we're doing this is because some client-side JavaScript libraries do not expect elements to have prefixes. Other than that, you could clearly skip this step and put your document in any namespace you want, using any prefix you want for XHTML. So now let's look at something else. I'm going to use Safari, and I'm going to access the exact same page with Safari. Displays about the same, and I'm going to look at the source code, and you notice that we don't have the namespace declarations. It's now an HTML doc type instead of an XHTML doc type. And probably that if I look at my image tag here, you notice that it's not closed, right? And the reason this happened is because in the pipeline we said, okay, you know, when it's not an XHTML supporting client, we're going to do a different sequence of transformations. We still use the QName converter, but this way, this time, we actually clear the URI as well, because I think that's what the HTML serialization spec says, that I think HTML elements have to be no URI to be specified, to be serialized as HTML. I may be wrong, but I think that's the way it works. And then we use this other step called the HTML converter, which is actually using the HTML, in this case, you're using the Saxon serialization serializer, which supports HTML, XHTML, XML texts, and that's about it, I think. So we serialize the document to HTML as text, and then in the end, what we do is we use this step called the HTTP serializer, which is actually sending this to the HTTP response. So here we've seen an example of how we can, with a I don't dare say simple pipeline, but with a pipeline, handle all sorts of document formats and send different types of data to a web browser. And the other method of doing this is actually to use the XHTML compatibility, I'm not sure of the technical name for this, but the compatibility, backward compatibility recommendation, which are in one of the XHTML specs, and trying to send XHTML to the HTML parser of browsers like IE and so on. So if you have a pipeline like this, you actually can do you have a couple of benefits over sending XHTML to non-XHTML browser. One of the benefits is that you can have on disk a document which is an XHTML document in any namespace you want. I mean, with any namespace prefix you want, sorry. And rely on the pipeline to clean things up for the browser. And another benefit you have is that if the browser doesn't support XHTML, you are actually supporting sending HTML to the browser instead of sending some ugly, hacky tag soup, which kind of looks like HTML to the browser. So that's actually, I think, some quite useful application of pipelines. Of course, given the availability of the steps I have discussed, which means a step to extract request data, a step to extract, to serialize that data, and to do a few manipulations on the prefixes and the namespaces of the document. This method, by the way, can also be used in portal environments. As you may know, many portal environments require that applications produce HTML fragments, which do not include a body or a head, but just some div, for example, as opposed to sending a full HTML document. So you can also use a pipeline to detect whether you're in a portal environment or not, and then strip out just a div from the body of the document, so that you can have the same application producing content both for portals and non-portals types of environments. Now, this is another, I think, interesting application of pipelines. Everybody knows what REST is. I'm not sure I know, but a typical REST service receives XHTML from a client, returns back HTML, that's all over HTTP. We all know there are variations in the payload. You can send JSON, HTML, plaintext, whatever. You know, REST doesn't talk about what's in the payload. But here I'm just considering a REST service that actually exchanges XML between a client and a server. And if you have an environment with rich enough steps, such as the request and response components that I discussed earlier, what you can do is implement an actual web service, or let's say a REST service, an XML service, I don't know how to call this, just with a very simple wrapper around an XML pipeline engine. All right, so you can have, if you're implementing things in Java, you can have a servlet that hooks up to the pipeline engine, and you can implement web services with that in the REST sense. And even just adding an additional, just using a very standard step like XSLT, you can already do some pretty interesting things. I had here an example, but I think it's not very interesting, so I'm going to show a demo instead. And to do this, I want to restore my my pipeline here. I want to disable this for now. So in this little example, I have here a nice little typical autocomplete box. When I type the letter A, I get 10 countries starting with the letter A. If I type B, I have 10 countries starting with the letter B, and so on. And you could hard code all the information, embed it into the web page. But what's actually happening here is that whenever I type a character, some JavaScript code, in fact here through the XSLT engine, but that's something I will discuss later, is actually calling a REST service, which I implement with a very, very simple pipeline. And I'm going to show you this right now in here. So this is the pipeline that's called whenever I type a key in that box, right? Let's do it again with letter C. Right? So the client sends to the server a little XML document containing the characters that the user has typed. I mean, it's not limited to the first letter. Of course, I can say A, B, and then I get nothing. But if I say A, N, I'm going to get a bunch of countries. So it sends the text I typed to the service. In this case, my input is called instance. That's the XPL syntax for it. And I pass this to an XSLT transform, which happens to actually load a list of countries for the file from a file called countries.xml. I can show you that file as well. It's a very, very simple file which contains a list of countries with codes. It's never nicely formatted. And then my service is in XSLT just implementing the logic of looking up all the countries starting with the text that you have entered. The way it does here is using the start with and lowercase functions, which are standard XLT functions. And then it actually returns only 10 results, right, by saying, okay, I just want to have, I think this is a little too, this. And this position is, oops, smaller or equal to 10. And now if I enter 20 here, and I just type A again, you notice that my list is longer, right? Because the pipeline is automatically reloaded, actually, in this case. So it's actually instantly switching from 10 to 20, right? So it's very convenient this way to implement this as a service in the pipeline, because you can actually maintain the pipeline very separately from everything else in the application. You can actually call this pipeline from JavaScript, from a web browser. You can call it from XForms with submissions. You can call it from another application which runs on the server. So it's actually a very, very simple way of implementing such a service. It's not a very powerful service, but it's OK. can imagine much complicated applications. Just with XSLT and a couple of components. In fact, those components here, request and response, are hidden. I'm just actually passing documents through pipeline inputs and outputs. So this is another application, and in fact, this service is also hooked up within using the if you want, the web application description language or the page flow description language I described earlier. In fact, this service is also implemented as a page in my description. And what happens when this service runs is that, again, this page flow is actually transformed into a big pipeline. The pipeline will contain the components to match on the request. And when I enter the URL update countries or countries, I'm running the service as an XML pipeline. Still in the domain of services, you can implement adapter services that way, right? Instead of implementing the service yourself with XML pipeline language, you can use this as a trampoline to call other services. For example, a service that doesn't support XML, but you want to provide an XML interface to it, or the other way around. So that's actually another thing you can do with it. There's a few words about AJAX, because an AJAX server, which is basically, in my case, a REST service, which is called by web browser. That's pretty much saying the same thing as implementing a REST service, right? And you do the plumbing with the pipelines. But I wanted to show a concrete example, which is based on the XForms engine that we implement in OVM form, because that XForms engine is actually based on AJAX, and it implements XForms part of the client, part of the server, and it uses AJAX to communicate between the web browser and the XForms engine. And so to do so, you of course need a server component which responds to client requests. And you can do this with XML pipelines as well. So of course you could implement everything natively in Java or .NET or PHP or whatever you want. I think it's probably too difficult to implement an XForms engine entirely in XSLT and, and XML pipelines. But you can implement part of the plumbing with pipelines. And I'm going to give you an idea here of what plumbing you can implement for a in this particular application. Actually, you still need to have a request step that extracts, you know, whatever the client sent. So that's a given. But then here's a distinction that people may not be aware of, is that, well, if the client actually posted an XML document to the server, which most browsers do when they perform an AJAX request, you have a bunch of things to do, which falls into the typical AJAX-style handling. And you have another use case where you have pseudo-AJAX submissions, and I'm going to talk about this as well briefly. So what about I show the actual pipeline, which I don't have here, but it's called XForms server.xpl, and I'm hoping this is the one. I'm hoping so. So, in the same way I extracted some information from the request using my request step, I'm doing exactly the same thing here, right? And then I'm testing on that request using a choose and different when constructs. Again, this is exactly like what you have in XProc. And here I can test on the request document and, well, if the request is post and if the request doesn't start with, you know, something like content type, the value of the content type doesn't start with multi-part form data, then I'm going to take this branch, right? So I'm defining a subset of the processing to basically try to detect whenever my web browser is actually sending a typical AJAX request to my server. And if it does so, then I run the request step again. But this time what I do is that I say, well, I want to obtain the request body. What happens actually with this is that the request body is provided as a URI, so I have a component here, a step, which is called the URL generator, which actually extracts this URI and parses it, right? And at this point, I have, as an XML document in the pipeline, the body of the XML request that was sent by the web browser. And then what I do here, because I said, remember earlier, that it's a little difficult to implement an entire XOMS engine in XPL or in XML pipelines and XSLT. So we just call a very opaque component called the XOMS server. But we pass it the request that we obtained from the body of the HTTP request. And we do even more here. We have an interesting thing that I think, unfortunately, we don't have in XProc, which is that we can directly inline put a schema for validation. And that's really very, very handy. Here I'm providing a schema called XOMServerRequest.rng, so relax in schema. And automatically it's going to validate my input before passing the input to the component. And this allows you to, for example, well, number one, to, you know, it's basically adding typing to your system, to your pipeline. But it's also a first step that's very useful to prevent malicious attacks on your AJAX server, because you can already put a set of constraints in the schema that are going to reject some random types of content sent to your AJAX server. And we do the same with the response returned by the XOMS server. Here there's no possible attack, really, but what you do here is that you make sure that your component satisfies a certain interface, and you just specify that interface with a schema, which is called this time XOMS server response. Right? And then when you obtain the XML document, which is the AJAX response, you just use a component called the XML serializer, and you send that back to the client. Right. So you've seen here what we've done. We've implemented quite a bit of plumbing using an XML pipeline to implement an AJAX service. Right. So most of the interesting part of the AJAX processing is not done in XPL. It's done in a native component, which is written in Java. But the plumbing is taken care of. And where it gets better is actually when you have a pseudo AJAX request. And this is not an official term, but it's something I'm making up now. Because but it's pretty much what it is. If you're going to do with a web browser trying to upload files in the background, say, you know, you can't really do this directly in HTML. You don't have such a functionality. So what people do is that they create form elements in a hidden iframe. It's really very dirty work. But they manage this way to perform background uploads of files. However, what happens in such a circumstance is that the server doesn't receive an XML document as it would in the case of an AJAX request. It's not, in fact, an AJAX request. It doesn't use the XML HTTP request object in the browser. It uses a typical regular form HTML form submission in a hidden iframe. But what you're going to have on the server is that you're going to have a bunch of form elements and the uploaded files. So what we do here in such a case is that we also use the request component to extract request parameters, and then we use an XSLT style sheet to extract the parameters and reform an AJAX document on the server based on the content of the form fields. So this is in fact what the Obian Forms XForms client sent to the server in general. It's something like, oh, you know, event requests, you know, there's a state information and other things. And here we reconstruct this in the case of a background file upload that's generated by the client. Why do we do this? So that we can then have the same document which is sent to our XForms server. So we have, this way we have the same XML document format which can be used on the server, on that XForm server component, whether you actually send a real AJAX request or whether you use a pseudo AJAX request, which is in fact a form submission. And the funny part is that when you respond to the client with such a system, you actually cannot send XML back because the result is going to be the content of the hidden iframe. So what we do here with XSLT is that we build an HTML document which contains a body which only contains as text the serialization. This is an extension function from Saxon, which serializes my AJAX response into some plain text. This way, the client has the opportunity to parse that content and obtain the same thing it would obtain through an AJAX response. All right, so this is very technical, but in fact, if you do web programming, if you do AJAX, if you do file submissions, you'll find you probably hit that kind of use cases. And here with the pipelines, I took care of all my plumbing using XSLT, a couple of request and response components, and then passing on the control to my actual server-side logic, which does something useful with the XML documents. So if I take something like the application I was showing to you earlier, and if I change the value here, 35 to ABC, whatever, ACB, while I was doing this, all the processing that I've just been described to you is happening. Meaning the client is actually sending through AJAX the XML requests, the fact that the content of the field has changed, so that the XORMs can say, oh, it has changed, but it is invalid. The age is invalid, right? And if I go back, I enter a number again, my field is marked as valid again. So all that work is taking place on the server through AJAX, and all the plumbing is done with XML pipelines. So this is one of the is another application, very practical but very very technical as well. Another thing that you can do with AJAX is actually solve in let's say work around the problem of cross domain. Well, the fact that you're preventing of calling different servers in the XML HTTP request component in your browser. You can't call any random service, but what you can do with the pipeline is simply implement a proxy or a trampoline that receives requests on the server and then forwards them to the actual service. For example, if you wanted to try to contact Flickr from your web browser, then you can just contact a service on your own server, and then your own server will forward the request to Flickr. Then I talked about services and AJAX, and it's still very, very much related to this. I talk a lot about XForms because that's the main thing that we implement in Orbium Forms, and that and the pipelines. And XForms are very interesting. It is a very interesting technology because it's really designed to talk to REST services. It has a very simple construct. In fact, not so simple anymore, but. Initially, it was simple, called XForm submission, which basically implements in XForms 1.1 what we could call a REST client. It's only able at this point to send out and receive in XML, but that's not quite true. You can serialize things as HTML form serializations and so on. But definitely, it works very well for sending out and receiving in XML documents. And it supports HTTP, HTTPS, and all the methods, well, the main methods that you need to use in REST architecture, like get, put, post, and delete. And so from XForms, you have a REST client through the XForms submission element, which basically means that you can have, any XForms application runs on top of XForms 1.1, can natively talk to RESTful services that speak XML. Right? So if you happen to have services out there missing either REST or missing XML or missing SOAP support, because XForms 1.1 has some SOAP support as well, then how is your XForms application going to talk to those services? And that's one area where XML pipelines can be used as an impedance adapter between XForms and such services. For example, we have here a pipeline, which I'm going to try to find. I think it's the Google Suggest, I think. Well, it's a pipeline which I could consider a single style sheet, but you just write this in the pipeline. There's an implicit pipeline here. What this does, actually, it calls the non-XML version of the Google Suggest API. In fact, Google Suggest actually provides an XML API now, so it's not very useful. But basically, still using XSLT as a basic tool, that is XSLT 2.0, because we use tokenize, ERC, and the doc function, which is an XPath 2.0 function. I can call the Google complete, the Google suggest search service, pass my parameters with the doc function, which is one thing you can do with log functions, actually call external URLs. And then I parse this string with substring before and token 9. I think it's a JavaScript result. But what I'm doing actually is that I'm producing as output an XML document. And why do I do this? Because my XForms client only supports XML, doesn't support JavaScript coming back, doesn't support JSON coming back, supports XML. So by implementing this adapter style sheet in a server-side pipeline, then I managed to break that incompatibility. So there are other reasons why you may want to use pipelines on the server when you use XForms. One of them, for example, that you have a bunch of things that XLT2O does pretty well, and that you can't do directly in XForms. I mean, XForms support XPath 1.0 officially, not much more. It supports some actions that allow you to add and remove elements, but nothing as sophisticated as XSLT, or XQuery, for that matter. So you can use pipelines on the server to actually implement services that are going to be used as helpers from an XForm client. So I can show you here briefly how I am calling a service from XForms. I'm going to go back to the to my example here with the autocomplete. So I type my letter here. What's actually happening here? I said it was done with AJAX. In fact, it's done with AJAX, but through XForms. And what's happening is that I'm actually calling a submission, an XForm submission, which is this one, right? So my submission has an ID. It has a few things that we don't really care about here. But it uses the POST method to submit an XML document to the server. And it calls a service. This is a related path. Called services/countries, and it's going to do something with the result of XML. So this is the XForm syntax for it. And in my page flow, which I showed earlier, I'm going to go back to it, then I'm going to hit automatically my page called XForm control services countries, which says that, you know, to run the service, you have to execute that pipeline called countries.xpm. So basically, when you have such a simple-looking web application, in fact, you have pipelines running all over the place. You have a pipeline run when I actually load the page initially. You have a pipeline run when I change a value in a text field, because that runs the AJAX server. And you have pipelines running when I enter values in an autocomplete box, because I'm calling with an XForm submission, an actual little REST service implemented with a pipeline. So the world is full of pipelines. And finally, in the end, what I'm doing is serializing, well, when I load the page, sorry, initially, what I'm doing is, of course, using the whole post-processing pipeline to determine whether I'm serializing things to XHTML or HTML. So pipelines are all over the place in this very simple application. So I think I'm almost done with this. I can show a couple demos in addition to those. Well, I forgot, yeah, this would be a demo as well. We have here an application which is localized by, actually I'm going to actually show the bigger page. It's going to be a little more interesting. This is a form. I have to make it smaller, unfortunately, so that you see everything. It's a form which is in the English language and has last name, first name, birth date, and so on. And I have a little drop down here, which allows me to choose the French language instead of the English language. So what happens when I click this? Then I'm actually automatically updating all the resources, nom, prénom, and so on, which is without reloading the page. I use an AJAX query. So in a typical application like this, why do you need a pipeline? Because the XForms page will actually call a service through XForms submission, but on the server, what your pipeline may want to do is actually call up the data from a database. You may have the localized data stored in a relational database. Of course, I would use an XML document, but we actually have people who want to store data in relational databases still. Well, I think they should use Exist, in fact. But that's another example where the seemingly very easy task of loading the resources on the server can be implemented with a pipeline. And in fact, in our pipeline implementation, we have a component called the SQL processor, which allows you to embed SQL queries and produce XML results back. And so you can, from a pipeline, by embedding SQL in it, talk to relational databases. Yeah. Some people want to do that. So that's another example. My conclusion, well, I'll do the conclusion once I've done the other demo, I think. The other demo is actually a very simple one. In this form-based application, we have a view PDF document. And when I click on it, it's actually doing a bunch of interesting things, I think. I'm opening the resulting document, but basically it's producing a PDF version of my form. Right? So what happens when I click on that button, I'm actually running a pipeline, which, by the way, producing the PDF for XForms is not an option, right? I mean, you don't have any PDF functionality built into XForms. You don't have it in XSLT, so how do you do it? Well, here, it's fairly easy. We have a component which actually is a server-side component implementing an XForms submission. You can see this as a server-side REST client. What that client does is that it calls up my XML database into which my the XML version of the form is stored. And I do this with an action called slash exist rest db or vm form and so on. I'm using attribute value templates to pass in the form ID and the document ID. The bottom line is that what this step is doing here, it's just calling up the database to retrieve the document from the database based on some input that has been provided to the pipeline through my parameter. And then I have a component called the PDF template document, which is going to simply take an existing PDF document and overlay the information that I provided in the form. So simply, a very simple pipeline with only two steps, which is able to extract data from an XML database and then somehow mash up this data using another component to produce a PDF document. Of course, there's some magic in the PDF document, but you may want to do other things. You could just want to transform the result from the database and then save it back to the database, of course. But this is a PDF generation use case. So there's this one. And then I think that's about it. Is there anything other cool, another cool thing I could show? All right. Yeah, so my conclusion is actually very simple, which is that if you're thinking about doing web applications, you can put pipelines everywhere, literally, assuming you like angle brackets. We've seen earlier that some people don't really like angle brackets. And then, of course, it's a problem to use pipelines and XML and XSLT and XQuery and XForms and XPath and X you name it all over your application. If you don't have a natural aversion, I would say, for XML, then I think you will find that in particular for web applications, XML pipelines are extremely useful. They can glue together the components of your application that produce a page. They can implement service, allow you to implement services. They allow you to implement AJAX. They allow you to implement all sorts of things like this. And I think the fact that we are standardizing XProc now and makes just one more component of such an architecture a standard, right? I mean, XSLT standard, XForm standard, XPL is not standard, but XProc will be standard and will allow to do everything that you have in XPL and more. And I think the last missing piece in that whole architecture is to have some kind of standard specification for a web application controller. And by that, I mean the little component that actually takes a description of an application based on pages and models and views, which produce and read XML. There's no standard for this as far as I know. And that's pretty much the only last non-standard component in this platform at the moment. So it would be great to actually one day work on that. So I'm done, and I would be glad to get a few questions.
Are there any questions or comments?
Yes, so early implemented pre-XProc, you probably have a viewpoint on what's
I can try. Well, I think most of what's in the Xbox spec is good. It's from a feature set perspective. It's pretty much a superset of what's in XPL, so there's no constraint. No complaint there. I think sometimes the syntax of XProc can be a little heavy, in particular with the. But that's from a feature set perspective, right? I think that's something that I would say ideally would have to be worked on. But we have one example that always strikes me is the fact. I don't have an example here of XProc actually, but. That for when you have input, you have to embed one element saying p colon pipe within a p colon input, for example. So you write three lines, right? In XPL, you just write one line, right? And if you want to embed a document, you can just embed the XML document directly as a child of the p input. So of course there are reasons for why things are done this way, but I think maybe it would be good to have some attributes to do that. I think that was discussed at some point. Yeah, the syntax sometimes is a little heavy. I mean, the XPL syntax is very heavy as well. I think in some cases, XProc is going to be a little lighter, in some other cases, a little heavier. One thing that I would like to have is something that I showed earlier, which is the inline validation. Having just a single attribute to validate any input or output in your pipeline is really, really convenient. It allows you to add, Norm was showing a validation example earlier. There were five lines of XML, of angle brackets, to validate a document. I don't know if you can reduce this, but it's going to be more than one line, I think. At least three, and maybe, I don't know if you can do less than five. I mean, you can put everything on one line, but that's not the solution. Here it's just one attribute to decide whether you want a validation. You pass the URI or the actual, you can have a mapping between the namespace URI, or the schema URI, for example, an actual file on disk, where you can just provide the direct URI and fetch the schema. So it's really convenient. Other than that, I'm not sure there are many differences. There are some very technical little things that are slightly different, but I don't think there's a great benefit of one over the other, except for the feature that we already discussed.
Is there any error mechanism in XPL?
No, there's no such mechanism. In fact, when we proposed the spec back in the 2005, we actually have a bunch of open issues. In fact, it's not open issues. I think it's just a how did we do this? Yeah, under the future improvement section, we had the exception module, and this has been tackled, I think, pretty comprehensively by XProc. So we don't plan to add anything to XPL, really, because there's no reason to, right, if XProc is there. But that's something we had in mind. We also had in mind, actually, a while module, which I think we don't have in XProc either, but we don't have it in XPL. But that would be the second looping construct in addition to XML, to P for each, which allows you to iterate over sequences and documents. But that was not ever part of XPL, it was just a suggestion for improvements.
That leads on to my second question. Do you have any examples of long-running pipelines?
I think that's a very good question. Back a few years ago, when Beeple or Beeple was being specified, I don't know if they're quite done in fact now. I think they are. But we thought that maybe XPL could be either an alternative to Beeple, or that Beeple could actually replace XPL. In fact, we figured that they actually have very different applications. They covered very different use cases, one of them being the long-running processes. Right? And I think, I'm not sure actually, that XPL or XProc or similar pipeline languages are really good for long-running processes. I mean, they were not designed in mind for that kind of processing, in my opinion. Of course, you can have a book transformation that takes 5 days, but I don't think that's what we're talking about here. We have, what Beeple allows you to do is really literally run processes that run forever, and that handle all sorts of things coming in and going out. And in all the use cases that we've covered over the last few years, in real applications, we never had really a scenario where we needed such a long-running process Well, maybe we needed that, but we would then have used something like a Beeple server instead of using XPL. I think those pipeline languages are really adapted for small transformations, whether small or big, but I mean, they will run in a fairly reasonable amount of time. They use really as a glue to perform a series of series of operations and documents, and I don't think it's I wouldn't think it would be interesting to actually add support for long running processes and synchronizations and kind of things like you have in Beeple in XPL. I think you can use XProc for one set of use cases and Beeple for another set of use cases. Yeah, I know who's for Kingdom 9.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I have one question about MVC papers. It is more or less old, and I'm trying to get a picture here. What is the advantage or the established MVC frameworks that are widely used in the web application? Yeah. I mean, are you just trying to get rid of the need of languages such as PHP or Perl or Java? Like, I'm talking about like Java struts or different PHP frameworks, Perl frameworks. And the second question that I have is, how does this compare to established frameworks? You have such limitation. Did you compare this framework, this MVC framework, you already
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. I mean, the idea of MVC here is actually the same idea having struts, for example. Except struts doesn't work with XML, it works with Java objects. But it's very, very close in that respect, right? And the idea, this is an idea that was born several years ago. And in fact, I have to say that we use this a little less now that we have XForms, which allows you to actually cover more, because XForms is itself MVC. It itself has a model component and a view component, UI controls. With this being said, the benefits of using MVC are always the same. I think if you have, for example, a pipeline that pulls up a service or that pulls up a database and transforms a little bit the data, and then you want to present that data in different formats. For example, you want to lay out data in a read-only table with XSLT, in an HTML table with XSLT. Or if you want to pass the data to an XForms page for different type of formatting, or if you want to produce an XSL FO output, and so on and so on and so on. Basically, for one given set of if you want backend functionality, for one specific set for one set of backend pipelines, say, you can have a completely different set of front-end pipelines or view pipelines that present the data in different ways. And so the combinations between the two are actually many to many. And if you don't have an MVC framework, at least the MVC concept in your mind, you may not separate those things correctly. And I think the only thing pretty much having an MVC framework does is encouraging that separation between fetching data, processing data, without too much care for the presentation part of things, and the purely presentational aspect of things. And that's, I think that's exactly what Struts is trying to do, or other MVC frameworks. So there's really nothing really really new here, right? I mean, it's fairly standard. It's a fairly standard architecture. Does this answer your question, or do you have any other?
I'm afraid we're getting a bit out of time, so maybe Eric can just quick last.
Yes, it's probably a question for now. It's related to XPL compared to XProc. Having played with XPL, one of the things I really like is the concept of lazy evaluation. The fact that if you have something in a pipeline that is not used, it will not be executed. It can be used together with the fact that you can define several outputs in the pipeline and only collect one or two of them. And if you use these together, it lets you build very complex and generic pipelines where you can do all kinds of things. If you are using this set of true statements, you have things which are, I think, much more elegant and much simpler at the end of the day. Is it possible with XProp?
I don't think so today, but the software I'm talking about, I'm not 100% sure.